We're here on one case today. It's In Re ATM, case number 09-1970. We're happy to be joined here today by Senior Judge Leonard Plank and Senior Judge Sandra Rothenberg, and looking forward to the arguments. So I understand, appellee, you're going to divide your time and arguments. Well, I'll just run the clock with 15 minutes, and whenever the first counsel is done, you can excuse yourself, and whatever time is left, second counsel can jump right in. All right, we're ready to proceed with argument for the appellant.
May it please the court. Pamela Strang, registration number 027513, on behalf of Angelina Madison, who is present. Throughout this case, Mother believed that she had the right to change her mind. And as you've reviewed, we've raised four issues in the opening brief, and for time's sake, I will address one and three. This case involved a young mother who made the decision to relinquish her child out of fear of the father who had committed acts of violence upon her. After obtaining independent counseling, Mother filed a motion to have her daughter returned. The court, in fact, granted that motion and ordered the immediate return of the child to her. The prospective adoptive couple motioned the court to intervene. They also motioned to have the order reconsidered and also requested a stay. The court granted that order and a stay was had. And then a hearing was held and the court ruled against mother and denied her the right of her child. And in this case, the mother reluctantly filed an expedited petition on the request of the adoption agency 4 business days after birth. It was well known that mother did not want to file that petition, not knowing yet the position of the father who was incarcerated and who had in fact perpetrated violence upon her. The caseworker discussed with mother a mechanism that could be used to protect her rights and allow the paperwork to in fact be filed those 4 business days after birth, without the court being able to relinquish her rights at that time. The agency requested the filing in an expedited manner so that they could obtain a case number for purposes of submitting the summons properly to the birth father.
Ms. Trin, these points are not in the record, or are they, in terms of the agency requesting the expedited procedure?
It's in our opening brief, Your Honor.
Is it in the trial record, though? I mean, I know you're saying that, but is that actually...
I know there was testimony in that regard as to why it's in the motion for asking that the order be held in abeyance. It's in there. It was stated as one of 2 paragraphs so that they could obtain that, and then it was briefly discussed at trial.
I understood the reason for the abeyance. Originally, in June, the reason for the abeyance was that mother did not want her rights relinquished until father's rights were terminated. It was not, I thought that was the reason to hold it in abeyance, that if father's had been terminated, mother was happy to proceed in an expedited relinquishment. Is that not correct?
That is correct, Your Honor, but I would explain that in the motion that we filed to request the order to be held in abeyance, 2 provisions were actually alleged in there. The first being that the agency needed to obtain a case number, which only happens when a mother files the proceeding, as you know. And so we were asked to do that so that they could obtain the proper case number to apply on the summons and then serve the father. And so in the second provision was that mother did not want to have her rights relinquished, not knowing the opinion of the father at that time. And so in all reality, we would not have gone under the expedited procedure. It would have remained as a normal procedure under 19-5-103 instead of 103.5. But in that motion that we filed that the court did order, Your Honor, it did state that it was because of those 2 reasons. Then the mother filed her motion to withdraw the petition, believing still at that time that she had the right to change her mind. And she requested the immediate return of her child. The court, as I previously stated, did in fact order that and granted her the immediate return of her child. At that time, the court closed the case, and so there was no further active case. In that motion, the mother requested the immediate return of her child. from the agency, and that was not Adoption Choices. This is, in fact, a designated adoption, and it was American Adoptions out of Kansas that hired Adoption Choices to do the Colorado relinquishment according to Colorado law, provide the counseling, et cetera. But Ms. Madison contacted the agency she contracted with first and foremost, asked for the return of her child, and they refused that. Then from there, the prospective adoptive couple filed, as I stated in my opening, the motion to intervene and requested the stay, and that was granted. And then the court at that time set a hearing with regard to mother that was not previously set. There was a father hearing set on the 31st of July to terminate his rights. But up and until that point of the court granting the stay, there was no hearing set for mother. And so that hearing took place, as I stated, July 31st, 2009. And it's our position, Your Honors, that the motion holding mother's rights in abeyance actually nullified the expedited procedure. Nowhere in the statute was that mechanism contemplated by the drafters. And as you know, in 19.5, 103.5, under the expedited relinquishment procedures, what's required is first the filing of a motion for expedited relinquishment. And that document, what it does is it asks the court to review the documents that have been filed before making a determination of whether or not this should go under the expedited procedure. And so that was submitted along with the petition for the birth mother. Also with that is the affidavit of the birth mother, and then the interrogatories we always submit with that, as we do the application for the birth certificate, an expense affidavit showing the legitimacy of any expenses paid to the mom for her sundries, and then also the affidavit of counseling, which is prepared by the agency and submitted with those documents. And so at that point in time, the court is to have reviewed the documents to see for their sufficiency. And if that time, if it's not sufficient, he would not have granted the matter to proceed as expedited. He would have requested a hearing be had. That was not done at that time. And so mother's hearing was vacated had there been one set. And so it was still to proceed as an expedited relinquishment at that point, even with the court. Though the court could not honor the 7-day mandatory rule that he had to sign that order within 7 business days. And so that was due to the effect of filing the motion to hold her relinquishment order in abeyance.
And then, counsel, excuse me, on the
yes, sir.
July 31st hearing, the trial court made a finding that it was a voluntary and knowing relinquishment. And did the trial court make any comment about her motion to withdraw?
Well, he ruled that she was not allowed to withdraw the motion to withdraw her petition. And there was comments made with regard to knowing and voluntary. And that came really under analyzing whether or not there was proper counseling to the birth mother with regard to whether or not she made a decision knowing and voluntary. And we, with all due respect, disagree with the trial court's finding that we feel, in fact, that the counseling was not sufficient. Testimony was given at the hearing on the 31st, wherein mom stated each and every provision that had been gone through. She conceded the ones that she did discuss with the caseworker, and then we noted very specifically which ones had not been complied with. And during that hearing, the trial court stated that mother was at least of average intelligence and that she could read and understand the documents. And so in the affidavit of mother, marked as Exhibit A to the petition, mother read, and I quote, "I understand that I will never be able to change my mind about this matter after a final order of relinquishment is entered by a court of competent jurisdiction," end quote. In the affidavit regarding the birth parent counseling, marked as Exhibit B to the petition, the agency caseworker stated under oath by notary seal that mother was given a document entitled Birth Parent Rights that listed mother's rights to this proceeding. And in paragraph 4 of that document, I quote, "She has the right to change the relinquishment decision, and that includes the right to change the decision any time prior to the court's final order of relinquishment," end quote.
And where was that again?
Yes, ma'am. That is in the birth parent rights that listed mother's rights, and it was in paragraph four, referenced in the counseling affidavit that was submitted with the petition to the court. Finally, the relinquishment interrogatory marked as Exhibit E to the petition, mother was asked, and I again quote, "Do you know that you will never be able to change your mind about this matter after the final order of relinquishment?" And the mother answered that question in the affirmative, yes. Mother, in reliance on what she had read in those three documents and the conversation she had with the caseworker that was presented at trial, believed that she had the right to change her mind.
Well, let me ask you this, Ms. Grant.
Yes, Your Honor.
The expedited petition itself on page one said that the petitioner, the mother, understands that after the petition is filed, she will not be able to change her mind about relinquishment.
That's correct, Your Honor. And then also in the paragraph right above that statement, and I will find that document. It also says in paragraph four where, Your Honor, I believe sought that information, said after the order of relinquishment is entered, the petitioner will be unable to change her mind about the relinquishment. Ms. Madison felt as though that went in line with the other three documents that I have quoted from.
Let me ask you this, and maybe it's better directed to the appellees, but apart from what the different petition and affidavits say, where in 103.5 is there anything saying that you cannot change your mind once the petition is filed? I don't see anything in 103.5 saying that that she can't, that the filing of the petition itself is irrevocable in terms of relinquishment.
Under 103 or 103.5?
103.5, I don't see anything in there. I think the statute, the statute I think they're relying on, and maybe it's better addressed to the appellees, talks about, gives an affirmative right to withdraw an affidavit from the agency once the affidavit's filed. I don't see anything talking about irrevocability of a petition.
No, Your Honor, and just to clarify for the court, what that statute actually says is that the birth mother is not able to withdraw that petition or the affidavit once it's been filed.
I'm not seeing that. I don't see anything. 103.5.
The affidavit, sorry.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything. Maybe it's better addressed to the appellees, but I'm not sure where it says that anything about not being able to withdraw a petition. It talks about after an order is granted, then you have to show duress or some other ground to vacate an order.
Right.
I don't see anything about a petition being irrevocable prior to an order being granted.
Yes, and I misspoke. What it does mention is the birth parent affidavit, that she would ask for the return of that before filing. And, Your Honor, you're actually correct, and I apologize.
Okay.
I misunderstood that point. And with regard to the issue on counseling that I said that I would mention this morning, it's our position that that was not sufficient according to 19.5.103.2a through g. And at the hearing on the 31st, we went through, as I stated previously, each and every one that, in fact, Ms. Madison had recollection of discussing with the caseworker and those that she did not. And the one that was most specific there was that if, had she been given the counseling as to alternatives to relinquishment in the situation that she was in, she would have otherwise not filed for relinquishment. And I see that I have 2 minutes and 23 seconds. I would save that for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Tom Belts, and I represent the agency Adoption Choice Centers. Adoption Choices of Colorado, and registration 6153. The legislature in 2005 decided to amend the statute in order to provide for an expedited procedure, and the purpose of that was to give certainty and time limits in terms of when these cases would be resolved and permanency would be established for a child. In so doing, the court allowed the petitioner, being the birth mother, in order to seek an expedited relinquishment. That would allow her not to appear in court, but there were safeguards provided statutorily. And specifically, with reference to Your Honor's question to counsel, 19.5.103.5 provides in subsection 1 small b Roman numeral one, that the affidavit shall also advise the relinquishing parent that he or she may withdraw the affidavit anytime after signing it, but before the affidavit petition are filed with a court. The relinquishing birth parent may withdraw the affidavit from the child placement agency or county department where such parent resides anytime after signing it, but before the affidavit and petition are filed with a court. And I understand the court's concern about there not being an affirmative provision in that statute that specifically says more directly that it can't be withdrawn. But I submit to the court that that language is sufficient to evidence the legislative intent that there, that is a provision whereby the affidavit and the petition may be withdrawn, and solely that.
Well, Ms. Bell, I think I have two problems with that, and I think you hit on one. One is that we're asking to do read affirmatively to preclude something by negative implication, that you're saying by negative implication, since it says you can withdraw it, it must mean you can only withdraw it. But the second problem I have is it's speaking only of the affidavit from the agency. It's not saying you cannot withdraw a petition from a court. And I think we're asking us to say affidavit really means petition as well, and it's really reading an awful lot into that, isn't it?
Well, I don't think so, because the affidavit is to be attached to the petition. Mm-hmm. So it's part of the petition. And consequently, I think what the legislature clearly meant was that in order to, in every relinquishment case, whether it's traditional or expedited, there has to be a petition. The only difference between the two is the affidavit of expedited relinquishment. So if you withdraw the affidavit of expedited relinquishment, then it would be a traditional relinquishment, and that can't be finalized without the birth mother actually testifying in support of it. So it's really saying the same thing from the legislative intent, is that if you withdraw the affidavit, in effect you're withdrawing the expedited portion of the statute. You go back under the traditional statute.
Or you may have no petition at all. If you withdraw that affidavit, you can change your mind and say, I don't want any relinquishment.
Right. But she'd have to also seek permission to dismiss her relinquishment petition.
Well, it would never be filed.
Which would be granted, obviously. No, so that's not a major thing.
It would never be filed. If you withdraw an affidavit, there'd be no expedited, because you're saying you can withdraw an affidavit anytime before a petition is filed. And I understand that.
If you comply with the statute. And that's where really the crux of the problem is in terms of the argument that petitioner makes. Because she claims, petitioner claims, that because she filed a motion to hold the order of relinquishment in abeyance, which again, counsel, who still represents her as one that filed that, that somehow that turns it into a traditional relinquishment. And I submit to the court, and I went to Black's Law Dictionary and also Webster's Dictionary, and if you read what abeyance means, it means to suspend or make inactive something. So what she was saying was not that I want to hold my petition in abeyance, but she specifically sought permission to hold the order of relinquishment in abeyance. So there was no required hearing in this particular case. I think if we really look at what happened was contemporaneously with filing her petition and affidavit for expedited relinquishment, she asked for the order of relinquishment to be held in abeyance until the birth father, she says, either consents or proper notice is given to him and presumably his rights are terminated. When she attempts to withdraw her affidavit in support of the expedited relinquishment, the court sets it for a hearing. And by so doing, what we have is a better record than you would otherwise have on appeal, because the court allowed her to make all claims as to any defect that may have existed in the pleadings, And by having an evidentiary hearing on that, instead of your review being simply based on whether or not the written record was adequate, you have the testimony and the findings of fact to the court that she just changed her mind. And so much of what counsel said has no bearing on this appeal because the court has made findings of fact that she fully understood when she filed these documents, that she only had 4 days to change her mind or when it was filed with the court, which turned out to be 7.
So that's a threshold legal question, whether she has a right to change her mind before an order is granted. And I think the way you read the statute is it's no different than if an order had been granted. If an order of relinquishment had been granted, she could then come in and say, I acted under duress and vacated under Section 51046, right? It's basically the standard you're saying that she has to meet is no different than if an order had been granted already.
And that's absolutely true. And I think based on the facts of the case, the court could very well conclude that it doesn't even have to address the issue of whether or not the birth mother had the opportunity under the statute because of what, you know, our discussion about the specific words to withdraw, because by asking for the order to be held in abeyance, and the only condition subsequent was the termination of birth father's rights, in effect, what she said was, you may enter this order. And a matter of fact, we want you to because we know we filed this after 4 days. And therefore, the order really should have entered the day that these documents were filed. And it was just fortuity that, in fact, the court did not actually sign the order at that time, but also provide there is one condition and only one condition left to this being final, and that is that we the court, terminate birth father's rights. And I need to allow counsel to have an opportunity to speak too.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Rajesh Kukreja. My registration number is 26137. I represent the adoptive parents, the interveners at the trial court level, and the appellees here. Your Honors, I want to first address the question that you've raised regarding the statute, CRS section 195.103.5, subsection 1B1.
And I think in your brief you call that a statutory prescription against withdrawal.
I did call it that, Your Honor. And the language does say that the affidavit may not be with the language does say or refer to the affidavit and not the affidavit and the petition. Nevertheless, in terms of reading the statute, the expedited relinquishment statute, we need to read the statute in a way to give effect to the language that's actually in that section. And in terms of reading it that way, if there is a double negative, as Your Honor, a negative implication, as Your Honor referred to before, it does suggest that once the petition and affidavit have been filed, the affidavit cannot be withdrawn. It does not mention petition, but if we look at 195.103.5, the statute assumes or presumes that the trial court is going to act very expeditiously. In fact, this could be filed the morning of one day, and it could be entered by the court 2 hours later with the judge reviewing the filings, making sure that all the jurisdictional requirements have been met. There's a 7-business-day requirement set forth in 195.103.5. So with regards to the mechanics of withdrawing a petition, the legislature may not have even considered that as a possibility because of the expeditiousness of this procedure. Thus, the fact that the petition is not mentioned only the affidavit is mentioned, indicates that there is an irrevocable consent at that point in time by the birth parent filing the petition for expedited relinquishment and the affidavit, and that the judge may essentially immediately approve that upon its filing. So as I look at that statute, I think that's why petition, or the word petition, is not in there in terms of being referred to, and only the affidavit is referred to.
So let me ask another way coming at this. Even with an expedited petition and a lack of a hearing, the court has to make findings. And one of the findings, and they're in the present tense, the finding is that the petition and the mother is seeking relinquishment is doing so on a voluntary and knowing basis.
That's right.
And the court, in fact, made that finding in July. At the time, it knew the mother did not want relinquishment, but the court still found that she is voluntarily and knowingly seeking relinquishment. And that seems counterintuitive when he knows she doesn't want relinquishment.
So the expedited relinquishment statute, I look at that as of the date that it's filed with the court, assuming that it's filed in a jurisdictionally appropriate manner, meaning after the 4 days have expired. So the court looks at the intent at that point in time. So the intent as of the date of the filing, which if I remember correctly was June 25th, 2009, the intent as specifically set forth by birth mother in the petition and the affidavit and the interrogatories that were filed with the court, evidenced or provided a prima facie evidence to the court, to the trial court, that mother did understand what she was doing. Her actions were voluntary. She was consenting. So
you look at past tense. My problem is the statute says the finding has to be the parent's decision to relinquish is knowing and voluntary. And I don't see how the court could find that on July 31st. I mean, you could say, well, back in June, maybe it was knowing and voluntary, but I don't know how the court on July 31st, when it has to make those findings, could say it is knowing and voluntary.
Well, it's presumed under the seven business day requirement that we're talking about a determination of the voluntariness at the time or very shortly after the petition and the affidavit are filed. So, Your Honor, there's a provision in 19.5103.5 which provides for the court to hold a hearing. And so the court is not required just to sign on the sign based on the documents that were presented. The question then becomes, what was the purpose of the hearing? What is the purpose of the hearing if the court orders a hearing? In order to give effect to the expedited relinquishment procedure, the hearing would not be on questions of has birth mother changed her mind as to the voluntariness in that regard, or I shouldn't say voluntariness as a change of mind, but rather with the pleadings and the documents that have been submitted to the court, if there are jurisdictional questions, whether all the jurisdictional requirements for the filing of an expedited petition have been met or not. So in terms of the hearing, it wouldn't be a free-for-all hearing in the sense of the court would go back to a traditional relinquishment procedure. The court is just looking at the expedited relinquishment statute and making sure, to its satisfaction, the jurisdictional requirements have been met. For example, if there's questions in the petition that have been filed, any of the affidavit regarding relinquishment, relinquishment counseling, I should say, was the counseling adequate? If the court has any questions as to whether the counseling was appropriate and jurisdictionally and met the jurisdictional requirements, the court would hold a hearing to make sure that the counseling was or was not sufficient. Those are the types of issues that I believe the hearing would be called for rather than changing it from an expedited relinquishment to a traditional relinquishment and having a hearing on voluntariness, change of mind at the time of the hearing. Because the expedited relinquishment petition was filed on a certain date and there is the clear expectation that it will be ruled on expeditiously, very quickly, within the 7-day period of time, we go back to the period of time that the petition and the affidavit were filed to determine if all the jurisdictional requirements were met at that point in time. If those are met, then the expedited petition would be approved and the final order of relinquishment would be signed by the court.
Could I just ask you a question about the status of the case? I know your time's run down, but we'll give a little extra time. Is the child still placed with your clients at this point?
The child is placed with my clients, Your Honor. They have retained counsel in Missouri, which is where they reside. Taken the steps moving forward in order to get the adoption finalized, which that's imminent. I don't know what the date is at this point in time.
And so conceivably that could happen before the relinquishment appeal was decided?
That is correct, Your Honor. That's pending out there.
Is the Missouri court aware of this proceeding?
To the best of my knowledge, they are, Your Honor.
I assume as an officer of the court, you'd have to tell the Missouri court that this court could divest the adoptive parents of that child.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not licensed in Missouri, but with regard to...
You don't have to be licensed in Missouri to talk to counsel and make sure that information is transmitted.
And I have spoken with counsel in Missouri, Your Honor. I have transmitted the information. I'm saying I have not had any conversations or direct contact with the Missouri court.
Right.
I have spoken with counsel and have informed him of the status of this appeal and of this case. and the child is now approximately 9 months old and has been in the, in my client's care.
The child was 6 weeks old when the mother moved to withdraw her petition. Was it your advice to, or Missouri Council's advice to the client that they persist? I mean, this result cannot be good no matter how it comes out. You appreciate that, I'm sure.
This is a very difficult situation. When we have relinquishment and adoption-related issues, especially when they become disrupted or potentially disrupted, the emotional toll on everybody involved is significant. I don't think there's any question about that. And the stakes involved here are not simply money. They're lives at stake, and there's the best interest of the child that's at stake. There's no easy answers emotionally in a situation involving relinquishment and adoption. With regards to this situation, if my clients believe, as they do, that the best interests of the child are served by being in their care, then that's the action that they chose to take at the time.
Thank you, Counsel. Ms. Strang, I think you have 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
I would say that my recollection of the Missouri court action was we in fact knew before the July hearing on the 31st that they in fact had already filed something with the Missouri court. And so in that regard, they in fact through the American Adoptions informed my client that she needed to have a court order and that some relative of the prospective adoptive parents was an attorney or a judge in Missouri, and they had filed action already there. And that was even prior, my understanding, before the July 31st hearing in 2009.
What are you saying? I'm not sure what you just said.
They had filed a custody action or something, and I apologize for not being able to coin it. I believe it is in the record in some of the intervenors' documents what they actually filed. I just was informed, and though I had no conversation with Missouri Council or a Missouri court representative, I was informed that they had filed something in the state of Missouri even before the court had done the hearing on the 31st.
I guess my question, and I won't take up your time on this question, but it's inconceivable to me that a Colorado court would grant an adoption petition in a case where Missouri was deciding whether the child was going to remain there.
Well, and in this instance, Your Honor, the case was being decided on a relinquishment, not the adoption. The adoption will subsequently be filed in Missouri if it has not, or as counsel has stated, has already now been filed.
I mean, we're trying to avoid a baby M case where we have a 10-year-old.
That's why we, upon Ms. Madison obtaining appropriate counseling, the very next day she contacted American Adoptions and asked for the return of her child when alternatives to the relinquishment were provided. And so then I immediately, upon my timeliness, filed the motion, thinking she still had the right, believing she had the right to change her mind at that time because of the representations that were made through the counseling and in the documents that she was submitted to read, and in fact did read, that said she had the right to change her mind until the final order of relinquishment was filed. And that did not occur until the 31st of July.
Why don't you take another minute? I think we gave counsel, and why don't we add 1 minute, and you can wrap up in one minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. In comment to counsel stating that the only difference between the two petitions is the affidavit that's filed is a misstatement. There's quite a difference between the two documents and what's included in those documents. With the petition with regard to the 0.5 provision, the expedited provision, there are statements as to counseling in there. There's the statement if she understands that she, that gets filed and she can't withdraw it. And then there, in the other standard petition, it's bare bones, very skeleton, and that a hearing will be set and she understands that and her rights won't be relinquished until she goes to a hearing. So in my mind and in my practice, those documents are very different from one another. And then I would just say that throughout this, she still thought she retained the right to change her mind, and that came from reliance on the documents that she had read and that from the counseling. And no evidence was placed in at the hearing with regard to the counseling other than their affidavit, which we showed through testimony had defects in it. And Ms. Madison stated that she relied on certain things, and though she was not committing any false misrepresentation, had she received the proper counseling, I see my time's up. Thank you.
I want to thank all three counsel for very helpful arguments. We recognize the importance of the case, and we will endeavor to get an opinion in due course as quick as we can. And thank all counsel. The court is now adjourned.
Thank you.